Really? Yeah. Okay, excellent. Let's just get going and see what it brings us. This is the wrong side, yeah? No. I can't. This is not what I'm supposed to be. I'm in serious trouble and I have to read this. Don't even know what's up and down. That's kind of bad start. Anyway, so let's get started. So the first question is as follows. During meditation, I sometimes experience dreaming. Normally, I can bring my awareness back and the dream stops before my head nods. I will then try to anchor to my breath or to metta meditation. Please advise, sir. Okay, so if you are dreaming, then maybe you mean like fantasizing. You're probably not dreaming entirely, you're probably not asleep, but fantasizing maybe, kind of being driven away by all kinds of thoughts. The dream thought is from head. Also, okay, yeah. You can try to anchor, if you like, your mind on the breath. You can try to do that, but and sometimes if you are very tired and you're dreaming and you're nodding and all of these kinds of things, then sometimes it may not work. Sometimes you try to anchor your mind on the breath, but you just get tense and you can't really relax properly and you have to use too much force and all these kinds of things. And it may not. So you can try, be very gentle with these things. Don't try too hard. And sometimes if you try too hard, you get tense, and if you get tense, it's very uncomfortable to do the meditation. You really need to be relaxed. So make sure, at the very least, that you are relaxed and that you are enjoying what you're doing. So you have to find this balance between, on the one hand, using maybe a little bit of willpower to attend to the breath, on the other hand, to allow yourself to just go with the flow of things, not forcing yourself too much. Experiment, yeah? And one of the important things here is the idea to give rise to mindfulness, ideally, before you go to the breath. That's kind of the idea. And if you can't do that, it may be that you need more time to rest properly. You need a few hours extra sleep, that maybe you are used to. Or maybe that you need more time to practice all the preliminary aspects of the path, all the virtues and all these other things, because these are the things that ultimately support you in your meditation practice. So make sure that your virtue is as pure as possible. So that you feel good about yourself. You feel that, I'm living a good life. I'm a good person. When you feel good about yourself, not perfect, because it's almost impossible to be perfect, but good enough. You know that you are trying your best at the very least. That's really all we can do. Get all of these things together, and then meditation becomes easier as a consequence. So one of the suttas that I'm going to read out later, it shows you the progress of meditation, where it starts out, and it always starts with sila, with morality as the foundation of all meditation practice. It's so important. Without that, there is no way you're going to have any success. So experiment a little bit. Try for yourself. Learn to be self-reliant in your meditation. Sometimes a teacher may not know what is appropriate for you. So you try to experiment a bit. See when your mindfulness is the strongest. Try a little bit to use the breath as an anchor. If it doesn't work, go back and just relax and be at ease. And experiment a little bit in this way. Find that path for yourself. The most powerful insight, the most powerful understanding you have is the understanding you build up from your own practice. This is by far the most important understanding. Okay, see what happens. If it doesn't work, well, that's often the way it is. It takes a lot of trial and error. See how things go. Okay, next one. There is a sutta telling a story about a country A wanted to invade country B. And country A sent someone to ask the Buddha if they could win the war. The Buddha said that country B had some qualities, and as long as they remain those qualities, they would not be invaded successfully. What is the name of the sutta? What are the qualities? Are you planning to invade the country? This is going to check it first of all before I say anything. So I don't cause any chorus, that would be really bad. This is from the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the great passing away of the Buddha. This is found in the Digha Nikaya, in the long discourses number 16. Yeah, you can find this on the internet if you look for it. And this is the place where King Ajatasattu of Magadha, the kind of the greatest kingdom in India at that time, he sends one of his ministers called Masakara to speak to the Buddha. And then this Masakara, the minister, he asked the Buddha, he asked, well, my king, King Ajatasattu, he wants to invade the Vajrayans. You know, what do you say? Yeah, I just want to hear your kind of advice on this. And then the Buddha says, well, I have given these Vajrayans seven things that makes them hard to beat. Yeah, seven qualities that makes them really hard to beat. And as long as they keep to those qualities, basically, they will be unbeaten by anyone else in war. And those qualities, well, the seven things, they are, one is they should assemble frequently. Yeah, they should, in other words, assemble as a group and obviously discuss things. The idea of having a democratic republic, the Vajrayans was one of those democratic republics at that time. Democracy is just as old in ancient India as it is in Greece. Greek is often considered in Europe as the kind of the beginning of democracy in Europe, but actually the Indians also had a democracy at about the same time. I suspect that if you look back into ancient history, as far back as you go, there will be this mixture of democratic and more kind of the royalty and these sort of things. So assemble frequently, assemble in harmony, yeah, do all your business in harmony. In other words, you can argue a little bit, but make sure that ultimately it is harmonious the way you do your business. That is the second factor. The third factor, I think, is to respect the elders. Yeah, so you have certain elders in society who have more experience, etc. So you respect the elders in society. Yeah. It doesn't mean that the elders are always right, but you know, people with more experience are given a bit of extra extra say, if you like. Then there is to respect the shrines, yeah, the internal and external shrines in the kingdom. And the idea is, of course, the shrines is basically places of spiritual significance. So you respect the places of spiritual significance in the country. Then it is you're supposed to welcome the, when you see arahants, or you see people who are well practiced, you should welcome them to your country. That part of the seven. When I'm mixing up with the seven for the monks, I can get a bit blurry here, but I think the idea is to welcome spiritual teachers to your country. And the idea is to put spiritual values very high in your society. If you welcome the spiritual teachers, then you are valuing spiritual principles. And that kind of keeps your country together, keeps it unified, reminds you of what is important in life, reminds you of kindness, of living well, of supporting the weak in society, not allowing people to have too many difficulties, these kind of things. Now that is about five, I think. There's supposed to be two more. Venerables, can you remember the last one, sir?
Protect the women and children.
Protect the women and children. Okay, that's a good one. Yeah, so protect, in other words, again, it's about protecting the people who are not a little bit weaker in society. Yeah, support those so that everyone is supported. That's a good one. Sir. Can you remember number seven now? Have I forgotten that? Recall that? Anyway, it doesn't matter. I can look it up. That's roughly the seven. But the best thing to do is to look it up yourself. So to do that, go to suttacentral.net and go to suttacentral.net and go to the long discourse of the Buddha, number 16. And towards the very beginning, it's a very long discourse, Mahaparinibbana, but towards the beginning of that discourse, this is where you find this. And then you can tell me tomorrow, yeah? Or maybe not tomorrow, that means you have to go on the internet. Tell me at the end of the retreat, and you can teach me something. See what the last chapter is. It's more interesting. They will teach each other instead of just being the teacher all the time. So I apologize for my memory being so bad, but there you are. Nobody's perfect. Okay. Next one. Here I am. It's kind of scary to think of myself in the deathbed. Is there any way to combat this here, can you do a death contemplation meditation this time as you did last year? Sure, we can do that. Yeah. It's kind of scary. It's scary because we think of death as something frightening. Yeah. But if you live a good life, death is not really frightening. I think, in fact, very often death is a liberating experience. It's kind of weird. Yeah, we're frightened about this. But for good people, it's often liberating because when you come to the very last time, end of your life, often the body is falling apart, either you're getting old or you're very sick, or whatever it is. And actually it's nice to be released from the body towards the very end of your life. So it's actually often quite enjoyable to die. Yeah? So enjoy, yeah, relax, enjoy, while dying, what a wonderful thing, get rid of this kind of old body, and now I can move on to a new kind of vehicle, a new car, or whatever it is. Yeah, I'm great. Last time I had this really dodgy old bomb on the car. Now I get a BMW instead. So you kind of upgrade it a bit. So death is often, we misunderstand the idea of death. That this is the problem. So make sure you live well. Live really, really well. When you come to your deathbed, I guarantee you, you will not be afraid. And you will enjoy the journey instead. Be kind. Be generous. Have a good heart. Be forgiving of people. We're all human. We all suffer way too much. Life is difficult for everybody, yeah? Even the people you think are bad, if you really understood those bad people, you would never be upset with them because you would understand what drives them. Yeah, there's this beautiful French saying, which someone reminded me of here before we came in here, to understand everything is to forgive everything. Tout comprendre, tout pardonner. If you understand everything, you forgive everything. Yeah, why? Because if you understand somebody, why they're doing what they're doing, if you understand all their conditioning, you understand how, why it is that they have to act this way, and then you will always forgive everyone. It's beautiful. And then you can't have any animosity anymore towards anyone in this world. Even the most brutal dictators, the most brutal people in world history are pretty bad. Still, you can forgive them. So this is a how to live. It's how we live that matters. Death itself is no big deal. Yeah, death is just part of life, something that we have to go through, and we have got through it so many times in the past, and we're going to have to go through it in the future as well, unless we make an end of all of this. Death is not the problem. The problem is how we live. Live well, and then you're going to die well. So, but let's do a death contemplation. That's a nice idea, so I'll put that to one side, just to remind me of that. Okay, next one on. Dear Adam, thank you for traveling such a long way to give us the Dharma talk. Regarding the cultivation of spiritual life, can you enlighten us from, apart from cultivating kindness, what other things that we can do? Cultivating kindness is such a big ask already. Yeah, it's actually very difficult to cultivate kindness fully. It is a full-time task. Your entire life can be spent just on cultivating kindness. Because it is difficult. Yeah, in ordinary life, you lose your mindfulness, you lose your ability to regulate your emotions, you forget what is important in life, you pursue things that don't really matter so much. Someone says the wrong thing and you are in the wrong mood because you got out of bed on the wrong side in the morning, you're really negative, and you get upset when somebody says that wrong thing. It's difficult to always be kind. So this is almost like a full-time occupation just to live with kindness in your heart. Remember, it is not just about how you act, it is about how you think about things. And to always think thoughts of kindness, it is no easy matter. But that is really what we are trying to do on this path. So if you can do that much, and of course kindness is it encompasses so many aspects of Buddhism. It encompasses not doing bad things, it encompasses doing the good, it encompasses how you act, how you speak, how you think, how you perceive, it encompasses your acts of generosity, it encompasses metta and compassion and peace and all of these kind of things. So it's very, very broad. So kindness is pretty much almost like everything. And then of course, from that kindness, in meditation emerges from that. It's almost like a byproduct of kindness. If you are kind, if you feel good about yourself, meditation just happens. You sit down and you feel peaceful and the breath arises and it's easy and natural to watch the breath. No sense of tension, no sense of struggle. It's just wonderful and a beautiful experience that you have. So if you are having problems in a meditation practice, go back to the sila. Go back to the all of these basic things that we have to do. Yeah, and it's not that hard. This is the interesting thing. It is hard only because our habits are wrong. But if we persevere, if you really commit to this path, anyone here is able to be kind pretty much most of the time. To think thoughts of kindness pretty much most of the time. Yeah, remember, people are imperfect. Remember, people are suffering. Remember, people are conditioned. Remember that this is true for everyone. Everyone wants to be happy. We all want to be happy. Is anyone here who wants to be miserable? Nobody. Yeah, everybody wants to be happy. It's obvious. Of course everyone wants to be happy. It's just because this is the driving force inside of us. Yeah? This is what all our desires and craving is about. It's about being happy, or at least avoiding suffering. It depends what you mean by happiness, but happiness comes in this vast range. Being peaceful, being content, having joy. All of these things are aspects of happiness. So because everyone wants to be happy, and yet if you look at the world, many people live in such a way that they create suffering for themselves. They live in a way whereby there are obstacles for others, they treat others badly, and they create suffering in their own lives. You think that someone who treats you badly, you think they are bad because they treat you badly, but actually they treat themselves much more badly than they treat you. Yeah, they are the ones who suffer much more. You just have to kind of listen to the stupid talk for a short while, then you can walk away. But they have to live with it afterwards. Yeah, they are the ones who have a real problem. The Buddha, it's a beautiful little sutta. This is found in the Kosala Samyutta. It's all the conversation between the Buddha and the King Pasenadi of Kosala. And King Pasenadi, he says to the Buddha, anyone who treats other people in a bad way, they are their own worst enemy. If you treat other people bad, you are your own enemy. So remember that when you see someone doing something bad in this world, whoever it is, remember they are their own enemy. If you want to be kind to yourself, be kind to others, because then you feel good about yourself. This is the right way of living. Always be kind to others if you want to be kind to yourself. So this is a these ideas are so simple, and yet so many people in the world don't live according to these ideas. Yeah, and this way you can have compassion, you can have understanding, you can let go of the past, you can take in people in your heart, even bad people, you can take them in your heart, have compassion towards them. You can feel a little bit sorry for them, that people are so stupid, they are creating suffering for themselves, even though they actually want to be happy. Kind of a bit sad, isn't it? They're walking around in darkness. They are deluded. They have no idea what they're doing. So think like this. Cultivate these ideas. Some very simple but very powerful ideas. Sometimes we make Buddhism too complicated and we make it into some kind of intellectual thing. Buddhism is not intellectual. It's a simple teaching. The hard part is to put it into practice, to persevere, to commit, to do it day in, day out. Moment after moment, that is the hard part. Yeah? It's not to understand the idea. The ideas are pretty simple. But it is to really believe those ideas deep down and then put them into practice. That is what you have to do. And this is one of the reasons I've been talking about right view, because right view becomes that stability behind all of these things. Looking at the world in the right way, so it becomes possible to live like this. It's not easy because our habits are so strong, but gradually your habits will change, and as your habits change, you become a new person. Gradually becoming a new person. Gradually feeling better about yourself. Gradually emerging out of darkness into light. What a wonderful thing that is. This is what this path promises you. Okay, next one. Dear Ajahn Brahmani, thank you for coming to Hong Kong and thank you for your wonderful teachings. Could we have a guided death meditation one day? Okay, This is obviously popular, so we're going to do do guided death meditation. Okay, that's going to happen. Okay, there are many posters on the streets these days, very messy everywhere. How should we respond to that? Especially posters we don't like. Thank you. Okay, so if you don't like the posters, what do you expect then? That's what's to be expected in the world. Posters you don't like, this is kind of the nature of samsara. Yeah? Posters you don't like, people you don't like, everything, so many things in this world that we don't like. Yeah? So you just have to, this is what we were talking about just before today. Yeah? We're talking about being united with what you don't like, associating with a dislike. This is part of life. And it's absolutely unavoidable. Yeah? Because it is unavoidable, you just have to go with the flow. Oh yeah, another poster I don't like. Okay, bang, forget about it straight away. Don't worry about it. And this is really the right approach. You can't just go and kind of, you can't complain, I suppose, if the wrong poster is in the wrong place. You can't complain and you can maybe get someone to remove it. But also, there is no point to that, because often there's just going to be another poster down the road, which also you don't like, and another one, and it's going to carry on like this. So just shrug your shoulders. People are different. People have different ideas, and because they have different ideas, they have different posters. Maybe if you put up a poster, you can put up a poster. If you put up a poster, somebody's not going to like your poster. Yeah. And then there's going to be the same problem again. So don't worry too much about it. Go with the flow. The world is imperfect. It has always been imperfect. It is always going to be imperfect. Withdraw from that imperfect world. There is no happiness to be found there. It is inherently problematic. Come here instead. Do some meditation practice. Be kind. Be gentle. Be caring in this world. Everyone is worthy of your kindness and compassion, even if they put up a poster you don't like. Okay. Okay, when those who are supposed to be maintaining law and order are violating the law, and those who are doing their best to protect the thing and uphold the rule of you are being persecuted, the rules and the law are persecuted without fair trials, what do we do? Those are supposed to be maintaining law and order are violating it, and those who are doing the best to protect and uphold the laws are being prosecuted without fair trial. What do we do? This is kind of the whole point of this thing that I was talking about before, isn't it? If you look at the history of the world, is full of these situations. They're absolutely packed. Governments doing the wrong thing, the police and the military abusing the citizens. It happened everywhere around the world, at all times, at all places. This is just the way that power works in our society. Abuse of power, you find it everywhere. Those supposed to uphold the law and order, you probably mean the police or whatever. I guess that was what you're referring to. Remember, this is universal. It is not something that you find only in certain places of the world. It's everywhere. And there's always going to be a problem. So what can you do about this? Well, one of the first things that I would say that we should do, if you want to take part in the protest, say if you are, let's be talking about Australia, because I don't really know enough about the situation in Hong Kong, but let's say the situation in Australia, where people are protesting against the climate problem, yeah? And to me, the climate issue is about morality. Yeah, we cannot destroy the climate, but what we're doing is we're destroying the possibilities for the future generations. So it is a moral issue that we all make sure that we allow the next generation to inherit a world that is destroyed by us. We are the current generation, and then the next generation, if we destroy the world for them, it's bad morals, basically. We have a duty to make the next generation inherit a planet that is livable and isn't overheating. So when I see these people going into the streets, I think, actually that I'm doing something to make sure that our society does the right thing. If the government isn't listening, if you protest to make the government wake up, maybe it's a good thing. I must admit, I find these people brave who risk going out, risk getting arrested for something they believe in very deeply. But the reason why you are successful in a protest like that in Australia is because it is completely non-violent. Yeah, there's no violence in that protest. And if you are not violent in the way you protest, people in society tend to back you up because they understand that you're actually coming from a good place inside. You're trying to do what is right. You're not kind of beating anyone up or being violent or destroying anything. And it was a very interesting, another interesting piece of research that I read recently, is if you're going to protest, how should you do it? And it showed that the best kind of protest in the world are the ones that are non-violent. Like Gandhi in India, when he was protesting against the British. For the British people, Gandhi was a criminal. Yeah, he was bringing everyone around and having large protests. But history remembers Gandhi as a very principled and very, in a very positive way. Yeah. So history will always judge you well if you do things in peace, if you do things in the right way. So if you are going to do some kind of activity, some kind of protest, make sure you do it in peace. Then there is the possibility that you will get, people will support you, people know that you have integrity, people know you're doing things in the right way. And if you are the police, if you are the government, you should treat the protesters also in the right way. When we do that, then we open up the possibility, if everyone has goodwill, we open up the possibility for reconciliation, for dialogue, for working out our disagreements. The world is always going to be full of disagreements. The only way to resolve them is to talk to each other, to find some kind of path forward where people can, we can work things out. It's the only way. So, when these things happen, you shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, the world is like this. The world is always, has always been like this, it's always going to be like this. And it is enough to get a bit fed up with the world. It is not really anyone's fault. It is just the nature of society that things go in waves like this, up and down. And the next year it might be somewhere else. Yeah? Right now you're having problems in Hong Kong. Next year it might be Perth. Yeah? And then you just don't know. These things are kind of always changing and moving around. So have compassion all around. Understand that people often don't know what they're doing. There is sometimes abuse of power, sometimes there is not. It's very hard to know. Have compassion for everybody. Nobody really, very few people know what is going on and what is happening. Okay. Here's that. Why is it that in the suttas, even enlightened people seem to disagree with each other? That's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes that's true. Sometimes you have, even enlightened people might have a discussion about something, and sometimes you have, like Mahakasapa, maybe having a discussion with Venerable Ananda and sort of disagreeing about how to go about things. It is actually a very good observation, because it shows you that the reason we have disagreements is simply sometimes we look at the world in different ways. We observe realities, we have different perspectives, different backgrounds, so we understand things differently. So sometimes you have the arahants, and some arahants, they were very ascetic, yeah? Other arahants were less ascetic, and then they might discuss what is the right amount of asceticism once you're an arahant, or these kind of things. So this shows you that disagreement is kind of inherent to the fabric of a society, or the fabric of human existence. There's always going to be disagreement there. So it's how we deal with disagreement that really is the important point. And of course, the point of an arahant is that they will never argue just because they disagree. They will disagree in peace. They will say, oh yeah, you disagree, okay, that's fine. Please disagree, there's no problem there. So we should respect each other, even though we disagree about things. This is kind of the right way of thinking about it. The problem is that we tend to attach to our opinions. This is my opinion, it is right. If you disagree, it makes you a bad person because you disagree. I believe in rebirth. If you say there is no rebirth, you are wrong, and then you argue with them, and get upset with them, and that is how problems arise. But actually, if someone else disagrees with rebirth, so what? It's irrelevant, it's fine. You can still believe in your thing, you can still believe in what you think is right, and you can accept other people thinking about things differently. So hold your opinions lightly. Don't hold them too powerfully. If you hold them too powerfully, you're going to clash with others. Yeah, if other people disagree, no problem. This is the right way of thinking about this. Okay, so I hope that makes sense. So let's go on to the next one. Okay, in one of Ajahn Brahm's talks, he said, if you have a headache while having meditation, don't zoom in or focus on it. It will be enlarged, it will get worse presumably. However, during one of the meditation sessions, he asked us to relax and observe which part of the body is in pain, then send some love to that part of the body. Well, which version should I follow? I'm not as a Brahm. Yeah, Brahmali and Brahm is not the same. So I can't really answer for as a Brahm, but I can make a guess what he's talking about. And the reason is because these are different types of pain. The pain that you have in your head is very often a pain which comes from trying too hard. Yeah, if you try really hard to focus on your breath or whatever, it can give rise to headache. People call it samadhi headache, but actually it's not samadhi, it's the lack of samadhi headache. Yeah? It's a trying to get samadhi headache, that's what it is. So it's going about the meditation in the wrong way. Yeah? And that is why Ajahn Brahm says don't focus on it, because if you're already focusing too much, then you try to focus on this kind of headache, it just makes it worse, because you're already trying too hard. So getting headache means you should relax a bit more. Don't focus. Allow things to be. Go with the flow. Allow your mind to kind of wander around. Allow yourself to nod off. Yeah? Here, you are allowed to snore. Don't be afraid of snoring. We will forgive you. We will have compassion for you if you snore in this room. Which means you can be at ease. You can be relaxed. You don't have to feel bad about anything, basically. But if you have a pain in the body, it's a different thing. The pain in the body has got nothing to do with trying to get samadhi. The pain in the body is just the way the body is. So it's a different kind of pain. Because of a different kind of pain, you focus on it, then you allow it, enlarge it, to dissipate the pain. This is kind of the theory behind that. So because of a different kind of pain, that is why different principles work with the different types of pain. I probably should be asking Ajahn Brahm, that's exactly right, you should be asking Ajahn Brahm this question, but what would you do if there is pain in some part of your body while having meditation? Okay, I hope that answers the question, and Ajahn Brahm might answer it very differently, but anyway, that's my reply, so I should put it on my Ajahn Brahm hat, that's what the answer is. Maybe I should have a kind of Ajahn Brahm face mask, right? Pretend to be Ajahn Brahm when I ask this question. So. Anyway, next question. Dear Ajahn Brahmani, thank you for your teaching, which is very useful for us. I would like to ask how to support and what to talk to a close friend who is suffering from cancer and his condition is quite serious. He isn't a Buddhist, but a very nice person. Thank you very much. Okay, so there's many things you can do when someone has cancer, and one of the things you can do is to teach them a little bit of things, something like metta meditation. It is well known in medicine that if you have a positive attitude to your illness, if you have a positive attitude, if you go to hospital and you have an operation, you have a positive attitude, usually you heal more quickly as a consequence. In fact, there are studies that show this. So the power of the mind on the body is very significant. This is gradually being kind of uncovered in medicine. You have the famous placebo effect. The placebo effect is very hard to understand from from a modern medical perspective, but basically it's a Buddhist perspective, it's a mind over body kind of phenomenon. Yeah, whereby you take something and this has no medicinal value whatsoever, like a sugar pill, and you get better regardless. That's kind of the placebo effect. You think that you take medicine, and even if you know that it is a pill which doesn't have any effect, still it works. It's really weird, isn't it? So you take this medicine and actually you get better, even though you know it's not medicine at all. It's really strange, the human mind. So tell this person to do some metta meditation. Yeah, to sit down, wish all beings well, wish himself well, wish the cancer well. Yeah, may you be well, cancer. Yeah, cancer doesn't like that. It doesn't like to be told it should be well. And the cancer kind of says, "What? Okay, I'm going to disappear. I don't want to be well. I want to do the opposite of what you say." I don't know what the cancer thinks. Probably cancers don't think all that much. But you know, these things seem to have an effect. Often we get angry with the illness. So by telling the cancer, "May you be well," we are kind of counteracting that anger. And that is really the point we're trying to get through here. Now. So this is one very valuable way of thinking about this. Of course, there is no guarantee that the cancer will go away. In fact, it may reduce the problems a little bit, but the cancer may still be there. And if the cancer is still there, one of the most important things that we can do to our friends and our family members, if they really are dying from something, is to be kind to them. And to remind them of all the good things in their life, the things that you have really valued in them, and tell them, "You've been such a wonderful friend. Yeah, you stay around here, you're such a nice person." Don't tell that to me, tell that to them. "I really value your friendship. You've been such a wonderful person in my life." You don't normally hear these kind of things, yeah. And when you die, you can know that you have been appreciated by people around you. You have lived your life well. Rejoice in your life. And when they hear that, it will lift them up. They will feel better about themselves because they will know that they're also appreciated by other people in this world. And sometimes it doesn't give you a big ego when you hear these things. If you are wise, instead, it reminds you, "Yeah, you have a point. I have done many good things. I made some mistakes. It's okay. I've done many good things. Wow, what a wonderful thing that is." So be kind. Remind them of specific times that you really appreciated. The more specific it is, the more powerful impact it will have on them. Remind them of these things, and be positive in this way. And then you are supporting them in a good way. And then they will die with far more peace in their heart. Don't go and grieve when they're dying. Say instead, "Okay, it's okay. It's okay to die. Dying is not the problem. If you have lived well, dying is not such a big deal." Give them kind of the Buddhist point of view on these things. So this is how you support somebody. And okay. So I'm not sure what else to say then. Yeah, this is part of life, and we all have to deal with these things. One day it will be our turn to get the cancer and things. And I often think, having had a father and a sister who have died of cancer, I sometimes think, surely I must have cancer too. If there's so much cancer in my family, probably I have it already. Actually, it's quite nice to think like that, because straight away it makes your time is short. Now is the time to do the right thing. Now is the time to act. If the cancer is right here, waiting to come out, time is always short, and we forget that. This is just a way of reminding ourselves. Okay. "Every time after my meditation, my head feels quite heavy, and my blood pressure tends to go up. Is there a reason to explain this?" The reason is because you try too hard. You're not really relaxing. Yeah? If blood pressure goes up, it means that you're doing the opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. So just relax more. Yeah. And if you find it hard to relax by sitting on a cushion on the floor, take a chair, lean back, and just kind of allow things to be. If sitting on a chair also makes you tense, lie down. There is room at the back of the room here. You can even lie down on the floor. Take a nice cushion and lie down. And don't do anything. Just lie there and see what happens. You don't have, when you lie down, you don't have to sleep. sometimes lying down can be very restful, just kind of watching the ceiling and feeling the nice atmosphere and these kind of things. And find something which makes you relax properly. What is happening here is that you are trying too hard, you're trying to be mindful, you're trying to do the meditation, and then your blood pressure goes up because you're pressuring yourself rather than relaxing. If you meditate properly, blood pressure goes down, yeah, because you are relaxing. That is kind of the point of this. So keep on investigating it, and keep on asking yourself how you can relax more, and then I guarantee you, you will find a solution to that problem. Okay, last question for tonight. From the Buddhist perspective of time, is it possible our future shapes our past? Is it likely causal implications from our future karma or karma? The future shapes our past. This sounds like science fiction to me. I don't think that's how it works. Yeah, I think the Buddhist perspective, usually the arrow of time points in one direction. It's always the past that shapes the present, and the present that shapes the future, and the future cannot really shape the past according to Buddhism. So I know that sometimes, you know, you read popular science magazines and they talk about kind of maybe the future shaping the past, and quantum mechanics, all these kind of things. I don't know. I don't know about these things. But I think the basic law of the mind always points towards the future. So this kind of reverse karmic effect, I don't think so. So if you are kind now, if you live well now, you are shaping your future now. And you will have a happy future as a consequence. Your past, even if your future could shape your past, who cares? Yeah, it's kind of irrelevant. Because the past is gone and finished, you can't do anything about it. So just make sure you live in the right way, and then you will be fine, regardless of whether this is true or not. Okay, so there you are. One of the things the Buddha said about karma, we were just discussing this the other day, is that if everything in life is shaped by karma, if everything is pupa katta hetu, caused by actions in the past. If everything is shaped by karma, then there is no spiritual life because everything is locked in already. So this means that everything we experience in the world cannot be shaped by karma. If that was the case, there would be no free will because the will would also be determined by actions from the past, and we wouldn't be able to escape our karma. So a lot in life has got nothing to do with karma at all, and to do with all kinds of other things. So remember that. So don't say, oh yeah, it's my karma that this happens. Probably not your karma. Maybe you were a little bit careless. Maybe you didn't kind of look after yourself properly. Yeah? So be careful in this life. This tendency to overestimate karma is very common among Buddhists, and it's often where they go wrong. Karma doesn't explain everything. Be careful in your life. Be circumspect. Be wise, then you're going to make the maximum progress on this path. Okay, that's it for tonight. Are you having everything okay? Everything alright? Yeah? Okay, good. So please continue as you see fit. Do some more meditation if you like. Go back and have a good rest eventually. And I will be back here tomorrow morning, probably around 6 a.m. So if you want to come out for that tomorrow morning, then we'll see you here at that time. So have a good night, and let's do the Arahant Samma Sambuddha together, just as a closing off.